Bring the meeting to order, please. Can I have a roll call?
Kurt Alston. Tracy Carluccio.
Here.
Tim Doherty. Michael Dressler. Michael Francis.
Yep.
Robert Altaway.
Here.
Bruce James.
Here.
Paul Richko.
Here.
Jim Riley.
Here.
Michael Sevicich.
Here.
Michael T. Fang.
Here.
James Pizzioli.
Here.
Richard Bowden.
Here.
Robert Wall.
Here.
Thank you. Can you read the open public meeting there?
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent a notice of the time, date, and location of this meeting to newspapers for circulation throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website.
Please rise and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That will bring us to the approval of our minutes and executive session minutes. Can I get a motion, please?
Moved.
A motion to second. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis.
Yes.
Councilmember Holtzman.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Richko.
Yes.
Councilmember Sevicich.
Yes.
Councilmember C. Fang.
Yes.
Councilmember Fisiola.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Walton.
Yes.
Chairman Riley.
Yes. Brings us to the chairman's report. At this point in time, I'd like to appoint the committee for the R&P update, oversight committee, and at this point in time, I'd like to put on that Kurt Alstead, Rich Bowden, and Mike Sevicich, along with myself. So,
put that together with our schedule meeting.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I don't know if this is the appropriate time or not, but at the last meeting, a member of the public, and also we had a brief discussion about opening the committee meetings to the public.
Hear you.
I'm sorry. About opening the meetings, the committee meetings to the public, and I think we probably should discuss that. I'm in favor of it. I don't think there would be any problem, except, of course, like the personnel committee. Probably not be able to excuse the public if you discuss it first there.
Well, I believe as long as it's a subset of the council and not equal to a quorum, but it does not have to be open to the public, correct? All actions are taken by the full body, so subcommittees are working in place to get things done, not necessarily our policy is set. So I personally would not support such a thing. It would actually impact the ability for the subgroup to actually work on those items in an open process and a deliberative process that would allow everybody to speak about the actions and things like that, not have public draw conclusions based upon information being discussed.
Chairman Ryan, we can't hear a thing you're saying. It's working. Can we turn the air conditioner off or whatever? We'll pull the speaker up in front.
Speaking on the microphone.
Yes, thank you.
I apologize.
So Mr. start Chairman, over again.
Mr. Chairman, can I address that too? I think one of the things that we did the last time around in developing the R&P was to have subcommittees open to the public for the public to sit and not comment during the meeting. And that would provide the opportunity for the public to remain engaged, know what's going on, listen, you know, openly to how policy is developed, because there's nothing to hide about how policy is being developed. It's actually something that benefits from having the public know how it's developed. So I think, you know, I really, the public asked for this at the last meeting. We did do it successfully without any interference from the public. when we put the RMP together originally. So I think, you know, the proof is in the pudding there that we the public participated. It didn't slow us down, and it moved, you know, ahead with a good open process. So I support what Carl is saying, and ask that these subcommittee meetings be open to the public, including the checklist committee.
Yes, sir. I just want to ask the legal thing. Yay, lawyer, do something to do. Our county doesn't, some counties do, and some towns do workshop meetings where they discuss all sorts of things. It's open, those meetings are open to the public, they're without comment, usually. So public comment is in a meeting like this. I have one committee that is always open. I mean, I have a lot of attendees because we do things by committee in Passaic County. So I have an energy and sustainability committee. The room is full all the time. On the other hand, our finance and personnel committee, because it's personnel, nobody comes to. I don't, on committee stuff, I don't care if somebody shows up from the public. Sometimes people wander in, sometimes they don't. But legally, with the Open Public Meetings Act, is there any requirement that when you're doing work by committee that's going to get to this board, that you have to keep it open? Or, I realize it's not a quorum, but when you're doing work that we then get to vote on, is there any legal requirement that that the public be allowed?
No, the Open Public Meetings Act requires that any gathering, whether you call it a committee or whether there's no name, or if more than a quorum of the council, let's say 8 members decided to go have dinner together, if you didn't notice that as an Open Public Meeting Act, it would probably be a fine. Challenge is a violation of law, because it would be very likely that council business would be discussed at such a circumstance with a quorum. But legally, under the Open Public Meetings Act, as long as the group is less than a quorum, it is not required to be open.
Yeah, I just wanted that clarified, because I actually didn't know. The Sustainability Committee, if we get input from the public on it, you know, it's not as big. But most of the committees are not attended. I just don't happen to care depending on which committee it is, but I'm just curious whether we were out of an obligation.
Is that call on me? Is that my call?
It is the chairman's prerogative as to how the committees are structured and function. Yes.
At this point in time, we'll leave it as a subcommittee, as a non-public meeting. I just think, as I was saying before, and I apologize for the background noise and me not having the microphone close enough, I think it takes away some of the deliberative process amongst council members and staff looking into these things. Everything comes back to the to this board in its entirety. No actions are taken in the subcommittee, and I think it keeps an open dialogue that sometimes does not take place because of fear of comments or how things are perceived and things along those lines. I'd rather get it out in one voice in a committee report, so and have everybody have their input put into it.
One more thing, Jim.
Yes.
I would go to dinner with Jim, but he refuses to pay.
That's not a legal issue.
You didn't take your ethics straight. That's your problem. All right, I'll pay next time. At this point, that's all I have for the chairman's report. That'll take us to the committee report, which is budget and finance.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Yes, I think ma'am. At this point, you usually also say, are there any council members?
Okay.
I don't have a report, but I wanted to request that I be on the RMP committee.
So noted. Thank you.
I mean, I have not been asked to serve on any committee except the audit evaluation committee, which I was on originally, and I really feel shut out of the checklist committee, the RMP committee, and since I wasn't an original member and took, spent many years developing the RMP, I think I would be a valuable member of that committee.
So, any other council members have any comments?
On that,
or any comments?
No comments.
I just want to respond to what Tracy just said. You made a very good point, and if there is one indispensable person on this council, it's Tracy, I think. And She's been here from the beginning, and she has been the most outspoken person for the community. And I would like to be on that.
Thank you, Mike.
I'll echo what Michael just said. I think there's only two members that were on this council when the RNP was formed 10 years ago. It was you and Kurt, and I think that she would be a valuable member of that committee, so I urge you to consider that.
And Chairman, Mr. Stepanich, I was just going to point out as well, Kurt Olsen was here from the beginning. I think he's a good committee.
I see other members on this committee that I would like to, on this council, that I would like to also be appointed to this committee that are passionate about environmental issues and property rights, and I think it's important that we have more of them on the committee. If we're going to add to, I would like to have a little input.
Mr. Chairman, I have one other suggestion. I don't know why we're going a committee route on this. It limits us. It doesn't allow us to have a quorum. I think it would be much better to have work sessions and invite the entire council to come, and then those that can come. But that is how we did it before. We met twice a month, and we had work sessions that were open to the public and open for every council member to come to. So I request that we have a work session process in order to revisit the RMP and accomplish our update rather than a secret committee.
Mr. Chairman, I take offense to the secret committee aspect of it.
Well, are there going to be reports back to the council?
Absolutely.
From the RNP every time?
Hasn't there been reports out of every committee, including the one you're on?
A very curse, very short minutes. No, not a full discussion. No opportunity for all the council members to participate in the discussion of whatever that committee is dealing with at the time. RMP update is the most important thing that we will be doing on this council in the next 5 to 6 years.
And this body, this board, will be having public comments and discussions on these items as we're required to. This is some groundwork that's being done by committee, so everybody doesn't have to come down here every other week. So.
Well, I think we're on the council to work. So if people don't want to come twice a month, they can go off the council and have someone who wants to work. A lot of people in New Jersey want to work. I think all of our council members have put in tremendous time and effort, and you shouldn't just assume they don't want to come to work sessions. I've seen a great commitment of time invested by this council.
And with the RFP update, there will be that need will continue. Any other council comments? Not just
I have a comment.
Sure.
At the last meeting, I made a comment about a preserve farm in Sussex County when we were discussing property values. I mentioned that the farm was preserved in a preservation area, and the development rights were appraised pre-Highlands, January 1st, 2004, at $12,500 an acre. And I said a current appraised value was $450 an acre. I apologize, that was wrong. Current value is actually $350 an acre. $12,500 down to $350 an acre. Appraisals were done under the provision of the Landowner Equity Act, that's known as the Dual Appraisal Act, which expires June 30th this year. And I think it's really important for landowners, it's really only means of compensation right now, that we get behind that Dual Appraisal Act. And I want to point something out. The average farm in Sussex County, where I'm from, is 73 acres. Without the dual appraisal method in July of this year, this farm in particular, it 73 acres times $350 an acre is $20,550. You take out it as a real estate cost, some land cost, and you end up with the value of a halfway decent used pickup truck. What farmer is going to preserve his 73 acres is going to trade it in for a used pickup truck? We're not going to preserve another farm in the Highlands region without this dual appraisal process going forward. And it's important that we get behind it. And it's being used as a tool down there for negotiation with the open space. And at some time, I think maybe we should do a resolution in support of the bill to take this forward.
Okay. Any other council comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back to that committee conversation.
Sure.
I'm of the opinion that the committees should meet, that committee chairman, if you will, present to the council and to the public at our public meeting a detailed minutes and discussion, as you have done in the past, Mr. Chairman, of conversations and open up dialogue between ourselves and the public as well. So I'm of the opinion that the committee should stay, as you suggested, number one. Number two is that the committee chair convey to the council a detailed minutes, if you will, and open it up for discussion among council people and open up to the public and field those questions. Those questions should come to the committee chair through the council chair. That's my opinion.
Any other council comments?
Oh, not you. Listen, I personally chair more than three committees that I'm in. I would not believe you would define it. We had an interesting call chairman in the next board. And what we found, can't hear me?
Nope.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. I do currently chair committees. And some of them require that you do a lot of brainstorming. And I think at a committee, if my committee people were more comfortable without the public there, not because it's secret, because they could just throw a thought out there and not have to answer why, because maybe it was just off the top of their head. You have to give the committee a little time. And actually, one committee, after we met a few times, decided it was okay because we became better grounded, and it was okay, and we did open it to the public. And it became controversial. We were almost sorry, but we grew out of it. So I think as the committee matured, you might reach that point, but I think it should be up to the committee and the chair of that committee, not necessarily our chairman, but if they're the chair of that committee, I think that chair has the responsibility to set up the mechanics of that committee. And if the consensus is that of the committee is that you should have the public there because it's more valuable, then you should have the public there. But I believe it should be by consensus of the committee.
Yeah, and I don't know of any committee that reports have not come out of and been discussed by this board, including the checklist committee. Any other council comments? Seeing none, we'll move on. That brings us to committee reports. The Budget and Finance Committee met.
Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I could, I don't know if you could hear me or not. I could make some comments briefly as chair of the Finance and Budget Committee.
We can hear you.
The application is for TDR and Patterson. Like every application, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is that, number one, it's outside the islands, so it is a transfer, good transfer for us. Patterson is a city that's looking for redevelopment and is in need of redevelopment compared to a lot of other areas. This will also be synergy with this because if they start looking into infrastructure, and as we all know, Patterson is the oldest industrial town in the United States, that its infrastructure is in need of upgrading in a lot of areas. And there are other agencies that would be able to assist with the infrastructure. So being able to establish a receiving district, these other infrastructure monies may flow and be a big help to the city of Patterson. This, as all of our other TDR grants, has phases, levels, where we go through so that our risk is minimized, so we look at the most important things first and work our way down. The bad news is that this one's going to be a little more expensive than a lot of the others that we have done. The ones we've approved so far have run about $40,000 apiece. This one, due to the infrastructure and other issues, I'm and the complexity of being in a city like Patterson, we're expecting an additional $10,000 to be required in order to complete it. My personal opinion is that all of them that we have looked at and approved, I would expect this one would have the highest probability of success, just due to the nature of the application and its location. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Holtman. And by the way, that meeting was February 13th.
Can I get a motion on the consideration of this resolution?
A motion? Second.
Motion and a second. This is a public comment matter, so at this point in time, I'll open it to the public and remind you to keep it to 3 minutes, please. Anybody in the public wish to hear it on this? Yes, sir.
My name's Hank Clump. I don't know, can you hear me? I don't really need it, but,
you know, have any of you people been in Patterson? I know you probably.
Every day.
Anybody else been in Patterson?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I've been in Patterson. And, you know, this sounds like you're pouring money down the sink. And as far as it is, an old industrial town, I mean, the falls, if you think about it. But it's in need of an awful lot of things. But it seems to me that even $50,000 is not going to do anything for this. And I've got a farm in Hunterdon that could use $50,000. If you want to put money in a grant, give it to us, like this is. And I'll hire a planner and tell you that I need more money. So this is a planner's golden parachute. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. My name is Dave Pfeiffer. I'm Finals Project Director for the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. We strongly support this proposal. We believe that Patterson has a framework that can sustain a redevelopment effort, unlike a lot of other places. But I do want to bring to your attention two factors about Patterson. One is, it's I'm glad to hear Bob Baltaway mention infrastructure problems. It has got a lot of combined sewer systems, and they do overflow on a regular basis into the Passaic River, and putting raw sewage into the Passaic River when it rains, because stormwater is mixed with the sanitary sewage. There are 8 stormwater outfalls in that category that are now discharging through a national park in Patterson. So I hope that your proposal does incorporate some thinking about remediating those CSO discharges into the river. It's quite possible to do this with careful design that recharges stormwater rather than just pumping it into the sewer system. Those are the most upstream CSO discharges on the Passaic. And if we're serious about fixing the Passaic, it would make some sense to work it from the upstream end down. Goodness transfers down as well as the badness. So that's the first issue. The second issue is the fact that Patterson has an extensive historic collection of historic buildings, National Register districts, and I would hope that your grant proposal does anticipate respecting those resources, enhancing those resources, and connecting the community to those resources. So you have the falls where Alexander Hamilton and George Washington had a picnic one day and said, ooh, we should do something with this. And we had the first planned water power industrial site in the United States. Sam Colt has a gun factory there. Rogers Locomotive Works, all of those things are present in Patterson. And finally, I've been to Patterson. I've been there, it's 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday on the main street, and I never felt safer any place in my life. So was a vibrant downtown. There were families out. There was shopping going on. The stores were open. It was not a bad place to be in the downtown of Patterson. Now, if I'm back in an area where every third house is a derelict home, I probably wouldn't feel so good. So you have a chance to build on what you've got in Patterson and get a good result and do something for the folks in the Highlands that are looking for compensation. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Yes, sir.
My name is David Shope, and I too have been in Patterson. As a matter of fact, I was in the original Colt gun factory, which was owned at that time by Sandoz Pharmaceuticals. So I've gotten a good look at Patterson as well. My first question would be, it's almost rhetorical, because has anyone done a demographic study to see who wants to live in Patterson? I suspect the answer is no. I think you're trying to create a market by doing some cutesy stuff by some cutesy planners who really have nothing else to do and are in it for whatever they can get in terms of grants, because quite frankly, not much is happening in Patterson. So they're hard up for work, as planners are all over the state, I would say, with a few exceptions, perhaps Jersey City. Our ancestors all over the world had the good sense to abandon cities when they were no longer economically viable. When there was no longer an economic reason for them to exist, they walked away from it. It's time we exhibited some of that same good sense and did a hard-boiled look at places like Patterson to see if they're worth saving or not. I am against this grant. I think it's nothing more than another handout to the planning profession. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Yes, sir.
Just a comment on
name for the record.
George Stafford Wharton, Highlands Coalition. I just spent 5 nights of my vacation in Oakland, California, and the Huffington Post listed the 11 most dangerous cities in the United States. Oakland was number 2. But Oakland has taken their waterfront, much as Hoboken has, and much as Jersey City is doing. And in situations like this, cooperative between governments and raising money in different ways, they have an area called Jack London Square. Jack London is a famous American writer who grew up in Oakland. There's a shrine to him at Johnny Heinhold's First and Last Chance Saloon, which I visited several times. And they have taken a section of that town, which is a town that's got a lot of similar problems to Patterson or Camden or Trenton in New Jersey. And through government cooperation, state and federal grants, stuff like that, they have a lovely section along the San Francisco Bay, across from Alameda Island there. And those are things that are worthwhile doing. If that's what this leads to in Patterson, I think it'd be very worthwhile.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Pat Moffitt, PPAC. This council has a mission from the legislature to protect and enhance the water resources. The statewide master plan identifies one of the greatest challenges the water resource planning in New Jersey is the depletive water use of the eastern counties of New Jersey, whereby they use the water once and then discharge that water into salt water, robbing any of the upstream rivers and streams of the reuse of that water. And what you are talking about here is transferring growth from the Highlands, where water is reused and has multiple reuses before it reaches the ocean, to Patterson, where it's used once, taken out of the Highlands, used once, and then thrown into the ocean. So I'd like to know, how do you rank yours? I mean, is Patterson's needs trump the water needs? Can you explain how you transfer development into Patterson, who has no problems with water, But at the same time, you turn around and say the Highlands can't use water because of supposed restrictions and limitations. You need to answer these basic questions.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Seeing none, we'll close the public portion. Open it to some council members. Any council members have any comments?
May I ask? Yes, I do.
Mr. James.
My county, it's our biggest city. My question is, what's the payment schedule here? You're going to be working with whom? The Economic Development Department? This was put in by Lanisha Mackle. She's the Economic Development Director, correct?
Yeah.
So what's the plan here? Like, what I'm just curious what this
is.
I'm going to be very frank. They're in the middle of an election. Who are we getting?
James Humphries, because he's right. But I can address your first question. That is, like the other TDR grants, this has a phase one after which there's a report moment about whether we decide to go forward or not. So the initial feasibility study, that is $7,500.
Right.
And then we make a decision on whether we want to proceed. So that's the at-risk money.
Okay. Well, no, that actually is good. Right now they're in the middle of an election. You may not even be dealing with these people come May. And it's contentious. There's a lot of issues. So I'm a little concerned. But okay. Thank you for that answer.
You're welcome.
It's a good point from your perspective. I'm sure we'll keep an eye on that. I'd like to point out to the public, our hands are tied when it comes to the finances, and we're trying to find ways to gain resources to fairly compensate property owners. This is one of the few ways that we can, or at least attempt to. And that's the direction. Any other comments?
The TDRs are the heart and soul of what we're trying to do. If the TDRs don't work, then that is a very big problem for us. And so if the TDRs do work, it'll prove a couple of things. One, in theory and principle, what we're trying to do is valid, and if the transfer of development rights, as it said, it really, we hear allusions to a lot of different things about money, but this is really taking the rights from one area and putting it where it's better used. And I think that this is a perfect tool to help us succeed as a Highland Council and a regional master plan. Transfer of job rights is key. If that works, what we're trying to do will work. If TDRs don't work, we're going to be in trouble.
Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler? Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holdsworth?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richko?
Yes.
Councilmember Savicevich?
Yes.
Councilmember Tepe?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Wolf?
Yes.
Chairman Riley?
Yes. That'll take us to the Executive Director's Report. Mr. File.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. According to the authority that you have granted me and the Executive Director's Delegated Authority Resolution 2013-25 for the last resolution, the following six action items were approved within planned implementation. First was Alamuchi Township, a checklist ordinance was adopted. In Chester Township, a checklist ordinance was adopted, and exemption determination ordinance was adopted. In Montville, Highlands Land Use Ordinance was adopted, and Exemption Termination Ordinance was adopted. Gulf Heart, Master Plan Reexamination Report, and Resolution was adopted. Also, as a matter of plan conformance update, technical guidance was posted on the website for lake and stream management. That goes to lake management guidance, stream corridor guidance. There are two volumes to that, and functional value assessment, and protection and restoration planning. These documents will be used by the planning and science professionals who will advise each municipality on solid and sound management practices to maintain their streams and lakes. Those documents are on file on our website. If you go to planning conformance, if you go to planning conformance implementation, technical guidance, they are there for your review. They are our guidance documents only, but I think you should take a look at it if you have an interest in streams and lakes. They are very extensive, and some of them extremely scientific. Under delegated authority, we also issued 5 action items on TDR program for the Highlands Development Credits. All of them were in Lebanon Township. We have one state agency coordination, that's Califon Borough. We are reviewing and comment on consideration of Exemption 9, which is the repair of transportation infrastructure systems to DGP. Planning area exemption, there were 2 action items, one in Hardiston Township. Exemption 4 was reconstruction of buildings and structures at 125% of the original footprint, construction of 4 solar energy canopies, and activities described in that application qualify for exemption 4. Also within planning area exemption, in Hackettstown, with Centenary College, was consideration of exemption 6, which is improvement of places of worship, schools, and hospitals, and again, that to qualify for exemption 6. Non-conforming consistency determination, there were no action items this period. Delegated exemption determination, in accordance with the council's MOU with the NJDEP, there are currently 6 certified municipalities taking advantage of their authority to issue determinations. There were 3 issued this past period, 3 of them all in Mahwah Township, 2 were exemption 2 within the planning area, 1 was exemption 4 within the preservation area. Our outreach and constituent assistance activities continues. We had 24 calls in the month of January, which is pretty much what we have had every month since the program began in 2006, for a total of almost 2,500 constituent calls. Staff attended municipal meetings, agency meetings, workshops, site visits, constituent meetings, and other administrative and staff development meetings for a total of 23 meetings in the past month, some here, some off campus. And that, Mr. Chairman, concludes the Executive Director's report. Thank you.
Thank you. That now takes us to the public comment on any issue. At this point in time, I'll open it to the public and remind you that if you can limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. Please raise your hands if you have any comments on any issue. Yes, sir.
My name is Hank Klump. I own 150 acres in the Highlands Preservation Area. When I read the Sunday Star Ledger on October 31st, 2004, I never dreamed I'd be standing here with my property values gone and no equity in 2014. Steve Chambers, who covered land issues, then wrote, let me just pass this thing around so you can see what I'm talking about. That's correct. I'm sorry about that. Let me go back here. Steve Chambers, who covered the land use issue, then wrote that the administration repeatedly said the map boundaries were based solely on science, but by comparing the final Highlands map with on an earlier draft, the Star Ledger identified a dozen instances which the preservation zone boundaries were moved. Administrators held closed-door meetings, and local officials and DEP mappers made hundreds of changes that caused thousands of acres to move back and forth across the lines. Officials wanted to stop development, and they convinced DEP to add land in their town to preservation zones. The maps were changed to accommodate. Assemblyman John McCune was a bill sponsor. Said if a mayor wanted a project and it was good for the town and the line was close, why wouldn't you move? Could mayors move lines? You bet they did. I saw an original map, and that's the one that's being passed around. I saw the original map at Tewksbury where my farm is located was not in it. Then, between the draft and the final map, Tewksbury was added, and my farm was put into the preservation area. I still am asking to see the scientific study that should have been done and in place. Why can't I see the North Jersey District Water Supply Commission study that was said to support the passage of this act and used by DEP to justify its regulations? Maybe because the study does not exist. I understand that this council has been given evidence of gross scientific misconduct by state agencies in promoting the Highlands Act and making rules. If the council knows there have been scientific misconduct or even suspects there has been, why has nothing been done to investigate this? Highlands Council, please, if these studies do exist, show them to me. I have been asking for 10 years. If you can't show them to me, who can? I have my property values and equity stolen. Don't you think that I'm entitled to see the scientific study, if it does exist, that changed my life forever? Counsel, can you tell me that you have seen the actual study? If you have not, how can you sit on this council? You should have seen these studies before you accepted the position. And it's ironic, but I got a P.S. This is after my thoughts of what I wrote. This matter has to be investigated. Maybe an independent group for honest results. Someone has to get the ball rolling. Everything has been based on studies that do not exist. Can't at least one member out of the 15, well, there's not 15 here today, be honest enough to help me who have lost so much? I really wish somebody would do something about it because we're not getting anywhere, and we're here again. The other thing. The other thing I'd like to, and I asked this before and I'll ask it again, no public comments outside, nothing. And Mr. Chairman, a favor for me and probably everybody else here that has to speak here. I got more to say, but I can't limit it within your time frame. So we all agreed, or your committee agreed, we didn't have a public comment on it, but you agreed to go into 4 o'clock from 5. Let's give us from 3 to 4 minutes. I'd appreciate that very much, because if 10 people speak, come on, it's 10 minutes, you know. Let's be fair about this. And we only meet once a month. You meet more, but we don't. And that's the only time we can speak to you. So.
It makes you feel better. I usually let you guys go about 4 minutes anyway.
Okay, that's a deal then. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be here? Yes, sir.
Pat Moffitt, PPAC. This council refuses to investigate the detailed evidence outlining gross scientific misconduct in the Highlands planning and regulatory process as provided in my July and September 2013 submissions. This evidence includes OPA replies revealing state agencies have no studies, analyses, or models supporting any of the Highlands water and natural resource claims. Council has been provided the email from North Jersey's General Counsel demonstrating the commission is unable to support, with any study or model, the single most important claim made to the public and the legislature, that if left unchecked, continued Highlands development threatened to impose upon the state $30 billion in new water infrastructure spending. The commission general counsel further admits the commission does not know how the $30 billion cost estimate was calculated, and further does not have any study supporting any of the Highlands water claims. The council then provided internal state documents demonstrating the many Highlands claims in its technical reports and responses to public comments were false. if not knowingly false. The council has been shown evidence that it threw its staff throughout the report of its own expert review panel, ironically commissioned to ensure public trust, hid the fact from the public, and then wrote a new report with contradictory findings. The council has been shown the methods employed that justify the nitrate targets and nitrate regulations are without scientific method, and yet refuses to take simple steps necessary to confirm the accuracy of the evidence provided. The council has been shown its nitrate dilution model is wholly incapable of predicting groundwater nitrate levels in the council's own well data set. The council requires certification by every applicant and their professionals as to the accuracy of submitted information under penalty of possible fines and imprisonment. The council, however, refuses to impose any certification requirements or code of scientific conduct on its staff that in any ethical world would be held to an even higher standard given they are creating the legal obligation. The council's refusal to require certifications and sign-offs means we cannot know if the Highlands planning and regulations are in fact technical judgment, as claimed, or rather political prescriptions. Let's be very clear here. The council has been given evidence of possible systemic corruption. And yet the council's chairman and general counsel have taken the position that because these things happened a long time ago and were prior to the chairman's tenure, they need not be investigated. It is time, therefore, we hear an explanation from the full council membership, as well as the governor's representative at these meetings, whether or not they are in agreement that evidence of public corruption that may threaten public health and our water supply can and should be ignored.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Please raise your hand. Yes, sir.
My name is David Cho. I was 66 when this bill was passed. The issue of TDRs working or not working was raised just recently. And the answer is, you have not been able to transfer a single TDR. It's been 10 years, a few less years since the program came up and running, maybe 8 years. You have not been able to transfer one. It would seem to me that question has been answered. The TDR program does not work, but let me show you what does work. That clock back there, that works. That works for me. I am now 77, waiting for a TDR to be transferred. Come on, get real. A major hole in your TDR program is there's no assessment, there's no environmental assessment as to the consequence of transferring a TDR from a rural area to an urban area. An issue raised earlier by Pat Moffitt is one that needs to be addressed. Pat Moffitt just now raised a whole bunch of other issues, which to my mind raised to the level of criminality. There's no other way to put it. In my mind, that's how I see it. And for you to sit back and not do anything about these issues makes you, in my mind, nothing more than abettors. If that's the role you want to be seen in, that's how I see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I address some issues of legality?
I
just want to clarify that we have received every OPR request that we have received. Responded to appropriately. We have investigated what documents we have, whether or not we can respond to them. We've done that fully. We have no evidence of any misdoing or any of the on the part of the council or fraud or criminality. I'm shocked, frankly, to hear that type of characterization, and I really wouldn't like the meeting to conclude without me at least addressing that point. Every time, the only quote-unquote evidence that we have are bald allegations in letters or OPR requests. There's no evidence or even the slightest bit of evidence of anything coming close to criminality. So we have complied with the law in terms of responding to requests. There is nothing for the council to investigate. Anytime that has been requested in an open request or in an email, I believe, Mr. Chairman, you have signed a letter, the executive director has signed a letter that has indicated that anybody that is interested in doing that is free to go to any authority they wish with whatever documents they have or they believe they have. There is nothing that we haven't responded to.
That is absolutely not true. Chairman Benny,
I concur with our attorney in that there's no basis for suspicion of criminality or fraud on the part of our staff. And I think that is an overreach on the part of folks who I generally agree with. However, they do raise very troubling issues with regard to the science on which this act, the Regional Master Plan, which is our domain, and other policy choices that we make as a council are based. I think it would serve this council well to have an explanation of some of those basic principles of science that are the underpinnings of broad swaths of policy regarding this act, nitrate dilution model being one of them. I'm a mechanical engineer, not an environmental engineer, okay, so I don't know who's right. I think I would be able to follow an explanation if I was given one, but I think we certainly are due one, and they, if only because it will answer many of the questions that have been raised. And as I said, again, I think it's a reach to say that there was deliberate fraud on the part of our staff, and I just don't agree with that. It may just be a genuine scientific disagreement. But I think this council, before we go into the regional master plan process, should be given a presentation as to the authenticity of the facts of the science on which the act, regional master plan, and metro policies are based. And unless we do that soon, rather than later.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am.
I'd just like to point out that there are technical guidance documents on the council's website. There are documents that explain thoroughly the nitrate dilution model and a lot of other scientific investigations that were done that became the underpinnings of the regional master plan. There were charrettes that were held where technical folks got together and scientific information was put forward in writing and verbally. It were many months of that and many, many, many hours. And I think it is a good thing for this council to become very familiar with those technical documents because a tremendous amount of work was done and valid results were arrived at, and that's what the RFP was based on. And anybody who wants to investigate that should start from the beginning and read all of those documents, the various reports that came out of the technical committees, and you get a good feel for it. But I think, you know, it's a good idea that perhaps we should have a work session that sits down with all the council members and those members of the staff who are familiar with these technical documents that are already in place and go through them and answer questions. And not because there's any question of authenticity. I have absolute confidence that the decisions that were arrived at after a couple of years of investigation and a lot of professional work, as well as public input, are absolutely valid and are a strong foundation that our RMP is founded on. But I think it is good for the council members to understand that. And one item in our report from our executive director that I fits in with this, so I'll bring it up now. And that's, I think it's really great that the lake management guidance, the stream corridor guidance, part one and part two, documents have been developed. And I do have a request that in the past, when these types of documents were developed, such as the nitrate dilution model, there were meetings of the council, and the staff people that worked on those or the professionals that had input into those came to the council and walked the council through that with a PowerPoint presentation. It really helped everybody understand how these technical documents are developed. So I would request that we, you know, consider having some work sessions before we go into the update of the RFP, so everybody really is conversant with the technical issues.
Thank you. I was going to wait till the end, but since our attorney chimed in, I never directed anything to say that we should not look at anything. Our staff looked at everything. Our staff looked into everything that we had available to us and replied to that, as well as some freeholders and
state legislators to look at that. And I think one of the suggestions, and maybe this is what's being implied, was to be active in the regional master plan review to best change those things. For a second, things that were are within the act, we have no ability to change, whether it was bad science or not. That's a legislative action that needs to be addressed on that front. At this point, we'll go back to the public comments. So when we get to people that have not spoken yet, please raise your hand.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. This issue of lack of science, scientific research and science to support the Highlands Act has come up on a number of occasions. So we looked into something. We knew that before the Highlands Task Force was appointed, there were two U.S. Forest Service reports, one in 1999, just on the New Jersey Highlands, and one in 2002. I'm guessing that
excuse me,
Mr. Holtway is probably departing.
I think he got tired of the conversation.
I hope he just hung up.
They give you a lot.
And there were technical reports associated with those two Forest Service studies. The second one, the 2002, I just want to give you an idea of the breadth of the science behind that study. It included the following topics: groundwater, surface water, water budget, water quality, forest and timber, forest health, forest land ownership, biodiversity, recreation and open space, ecosystem-based management and ecological classification, conservation values assessment, and it looked at the potential changes and resources at risk, population, build-out analysis, the likelihood of land use change and econometric modeling, changes in land use and land cover, land indicators of forest and watershed integrity. It looked at the resources at risk. It looked at resource assessment and conservation values. It looked at potential changes in resources at risk. It looked at the resource summary and conservation strategies. Now that's just one report, and that is just a slight introduction to the data that is behind that one report. You have a tremendous amount of data available to you on your own website from your own data. So I just want to suggest to you, do not accept, think for a minute that there is no science behind the protection of the Highlands and justifying it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? Yes.
Terry Kern, OHACCON. I appreciate the dialogue here in considering reviewing some of this science. Apparently there's obviously a lot of question here that we're all talking about. It wouldn't surprise me one bit that there could be mistakes in there. And one thing we're not looking at is the original council. I'm sure if anything was going to be swayed one way or another, we all know which way it was going. So for that to be opened up and looked at might not be a bad idea and would certainly be fair to the people that have been affected here. My other comment is, in the past, this council at least made me believe that somehow they really cared about my compensation. I may have read them wrong, I'm not sure, but there's an opportunity here for this council to follow Mr. Bowden's advice in at least supporting this dual appraisal for a further time. With the economy the way it is, with towns with no money, no one's been able to act, nobody has any money to buy anything. One thing we do all know about the Act is they did talk about compensation. I imagine there's some here that probably say differently, but I think we could all believe that that was always the intent. I would also like this council to support, I want a resolution for Mr. Bowden's suggestion, and I would like another resolution in support of Senator Orho's new bill out. I don't know if you've seen it or read it, but if there's really any proof of caring in this council about what's been done to landowners and no compensation, I've been told plenty of times by the chair that their hands are tied to some extent. But there is an opportunity here to reach out and at least support these things that can make the landowners whole. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
That's a lot. 355.
just stop.
Good evening, Dave Piper from Angels. I just want to address one of the previous comments about the boundary issue. This issue was resolved in two court cases that we tried up to the Supreme Court level in New Jersey. I don't think there's any reason for you to be concerned about that issue. The courts have spoken on it, and I think it's a separate thing. The fact is that a legislature or a regulatory agency can draw boundaries as it judges fit.
That doesn't make it moral. I mean, listen. Sorry,
sorry. No science.
But those boundaries are such horse manure. They're right angles and straight lines, but don't exist in science. And yes, it's legal. The Supreme Court endorses it. That doesn't make it moral.
I didn't say it was moral. I said it was legal.
Well, I don't think we hold ourselves to a higher standard. Sorry, Chair.
The settled legal.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Yes, sir.
My name is David Chung, and let's shoot in a short phrase for the night resolution of freight and transport. Look it up, see what it means, see how it affects your model. Freight and transport, okay? This is a document, New Jersey Water Supply Authority, and this is how they do it. The authorship is noted. The people who participated are noted. You know who is responsible for this document. When I read the stuff that it comes out of this August body here, it's just a report under your letterhead. That's it. You have no idea as to authorship. You have no idea who made it. Consequently, the authors are anonymous and bear no consequences. I will just ask Mr. Davis to review the legal system of the United States here for a little bit. Let's go back to Plessy versus Ferguson. That was legal. Go back to the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. That was legal, upheld by the Supreme Court numerous times. You want to get into legal doctrine and see how it has changed over years. What is legal today is not necessarily legal tomorrow. So don't go pointing to stuff that is legal today that you, I would hope, have trouble with morally just because it's legal today. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public? Yes, sir.
I'm George Stafford again, Highlands Coalition in Portland. Given the level of suspicion that's here, and the kind of conspiracy theories that go on in the community about what goes on in Highlands, you might want to reconsider excluding the public from your meetings. As far as the more transparent you are, this, as an old PR guy, the more transparent you are, the more open you are, the less sort of thing is going to happen. So when you consider the master plan and you have these meetings, I think in long haul, you'd be better off as far as letting the public come in and see those meetings. It's just a suggestion. Thank you very much.
Anybody else in the public wish to hear? Yes, ma'am.
Julia Simons, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Mr. Bowden, the dual appraisal is used whenever there is public money used for acquisition of property. And so if the council passes, which we completely support, passes a resolution in support of continuing the dual appraisal, it behooves you to also pass a resolution in support of continuous funding for the Green Acres program, because there will be no need for a dual appraisal without it. Also, the other thing is this council does have responsibility for water allocation in the Highlands, even in the planning area. And I just want to bring to your attention that there is development being proposed in a planning area town for a major hotel in Mountain Lakes, planning area not conforming. However, there are water shortages in Mountain Lakes, so I do believe that the DEP is expected to take your recommendations based on what we know about the shortages in the Huck 14s in the Highlands. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention because it's an important issue, and it, you know, it's one of the worst areas of water shortage in the Highlands. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public? Yes, sir.
Tank Club again, and I do to Mr. Bowden's do appraisal, but I thought that was done. I brought that up 3-4 months ago, and I thought it was done. And as long as you're going to do that, and you're going to put a letter in that form,
let's make it
so that the we have a dedicated funding source for the Highlands. How about that? $200,000 a year? Wouldn't that be nice? Huh?
Come on.
A dedicated funding source for the Highlands. Put it right on with the dual appraisal. That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd just like to respond to Mr. Davis for a moment. This has to do with the nitrate dilution model, which is at the center of most of my comments.
Yes,
has to do with the nitrate dilution model. Nitrate dilution model has nothing to do with the legislature. It has to do with the actions of this council and NJBTP. Right? Mr. Davis says that everything has been explained. This council's reliance on the nitrate dilution model rests on a claim that the model is widely used in the United States. Right? Open replies have shown that neither this council nor NJBTP can name another state or federal agency using the model, right? Councils claim fate and transport models are never used. Again, in defense of its model, Mr. File talks about the new lake management study. It has 5 pages discussing the use of fate and transport models for nitrate investigation, including what this council claimed is impossible, that you can calculate non-septic sources, right? So how Mr. Davis can sit here and say that all these things have been resolved is absolutely beyond me. I've given this council simple checks. If you want to see the truth of fate and transport model, go to a Google search. Put fate and transport, nitrate, investigation, and see if what I'm telling you is true. Because the claim which you've already admitted you can't support that your nitrate dilution model is widely used, you've already said you really don't. Right. Fate and transport model, you can solve that in 30 seconds. In fact, we can solve it with the report Mr. File has. So there are some things here that have not been resolved, and I would suggest Mr. Davis take another look at what's been submitted.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard?
Wait till the end. They got 3 minutes to comment. I don't see where it's 3 minutes to comment. You sit down, you get up for another 3 minutes to comment, you sit down, you get up for another 3 minutes to comment.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard? See none. We'll close public portion.
Thank you.
We have no executive session this evening, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Chairman, just one suggestion. I'd like to pick up what Mr. Klunk suggested, that we go to 4 minutes for public comment, and then perhaps people won't need to stand up again. But to go to 4 minutes, I think, is reasonable, and most people won't use 4 minutes. But if people need 4 minutes, I don't see where 1 minute by one person is going to make a break.
As I said, since I've sat in this chair for the most part, I've been pretty low.
Well, just like to suggest formally talking and putting on our minutes that we have on our agendas that we have 4 minutes so people can plan and make their comments in 4 minutes.
I think a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.